Here we are, and good morning. This is Up North News. I'm founding editor Pat Kreitlow coming to you live from Lake Wissota. Deb Baldus McGrath will join us in just a couple of minutes. It is Tuesday, the second day of August, the second day of our coffee breaks together, and I promise I won't do that for every day of the month. Luke Mathers is our producer. Good morning, Luke. Let's start with anything you would like to say briefly about your bold prediction that the Milwaukee Brewers won't do anything before the trade deadline.
Boy, was I wrong. We got off air at a couple, like within an hour or two of us getting off air yesterday, there we had some breaking news around that. So I was wrong, and I had a healthy breakfast of crow this morning.
I was going to say, I hope there was some crow in your omelet. But again, it was a shock. But then when you look at what we got for him, it wasn't that big of a shock. You know, baseball's a business, which means it'll break your heart sometimes. And, you know, maybe we are very well positioned, not just for the rest of this season, but beyond. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm hoping that means the bullpen is going to be a little restocked. We also made a trade last night with the Rangers, I believe. So we pulled in another closing pitcher off of that. It'll be very interesting to see. But I, like you, Pat, I need to figure out how to get a little bit more steps in the mornings now, because being here at the production desk with you is throwing off my Apple Watch. It was yelling at me.
We're both going through that. We don't have the routine that our guest has once had. So we'll talk more about our routines later. We'll get into business today, because as it so happens, all 3 hours today feature candidates for Congress. And our first one jumps out of airplanes and other things from her days in the Army. But to give her a proper introduction, and to all the candidates that we're talking to today, Democrat Ron Kind was first elected to the 3rd Congressional District in Western and Central Wisconsin in 1996. This year, he announced his retirement, opening a seat in one of the most closely divided and now most closely watched districts in the country. The presumptive Republican nominee was on the U.S. Capitol grounds on that January 6th when a mob tried to cause harm to some of our nation's top leaders and pave the way for Donald Trump to attempt a coup. Derek Van Orden has not apologized for his presence or for his rhetoric about the lies that prompted an insurrection. And yet, he has a fair chance to be Western Wisconsin's next congressman. Two women and two men are running in next Tuesday's Democratic primary to see who will face Van Orden in November. We have Deb Baldus McGrath this hour, Rebecca Cook in our next hour, State Senator Brad Paff in our 10 o'clock hour, and then Mark Newman will visit with us in the 9 o'clock hour on Thursday. Deb McGrath, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, Pat, thank you. And congratulations on your show. I'm so, so pleased.
And thank you.
Democracy is at risk, and that is why I'm running for Congress. And as you framed this race, it is one of the most important in the nation, because Wisconsin, so goes the rest of this nation. So I am Deb Baldus McGrath, and I'm from Menominee. I was born and raised there, and I live there today. And I joined the military. My mom was a teacher, and my dad, Al Baldus, was a combat veteran, and he'd been a farmer, and then later was an assemblyman and congressman for this district. And I grew up learning about service and that everybody serves. I joined the military at a time when few women did. And my first assignment was airborne school. And as you mentioned, I was the only woman in my airborne class of 140 men. And yet I was harassed, but I wouldn't quit. And I was the first one out of the plane. And that's the grit that I developed for the rest of my life. I went on to serve as an Army officer in the DMZ and in the CIA as an officer for an additional 20 years, total 25 years serving our government. And in those years, I fought tyranny and terrorism, and I saw democracies fall and fail, and I saw these symptoms at home, and I saw the economic suffering at home. So on January 6th, as you mentioned, that the Republican opponent in this race was there, someone that had taken the same oath to protect and defend our Constitution, and he'd almost won, 2.7 points. And that is why I'm running. We need to have somebody who can stand up for this district, and I will be a champion for our families, for our economy, and the strength of our nation.
Thank you, Deb. I appreciate that. We're going to do three segments with these candidates, basically the first 50 minutes of each hour. I will ask as many of the same questions as possible, or at least the same topic areas, but with the better part of an hour at our disposal, which we think is does a service to the voters, we will surely venture off into all manner of tangents with each of our candidates. And Deb, we've got about 90 seconds till our first break. So I think we'll just talk very briefly about the news, and we'll come back to international matters. But because of your experience, I know I certainly felt immense relief that we had finally taken out Al-Qaeda's leader, al-Zawahiri, a few days ago. What was your own initial reaction to that?
Relief as well, and pride, because this is something that I had directly supported counterterrorism operations in our war zones, and specifically in Afghanistan. And I had supported the operations in Jalalabad, where we've gotten Osama bin Laden. And this is an example where when I say I will never stop fighting for our rights and I will never stop fighting for our security, this is what I mean. We're tireless. We will never give up for America. And so let's frame who Zawahiri was. This was the number two to Osama bin Laden. And he was a mastermind of someone who had, you know, the 9/11 planning, the coal bombing in Yemen, and our embassies in Tanzania and in Kenya. And I've lost friends. There are stars on those walls and military colleagues. And so I've lost friends, and I directly supported these operations, and we will never stop.
Appreciate that. All right. Deb Baldus McGrath, let's take our first break. This is Up North News. Get our daily newsletter by signing up at upnorthnewswi.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Pleasant, slightly warmer conditions today will give way to a chance of thunderstorms the farther north you are. Low 80s today, high 80s tomorrow, mid 80s and quiet on Thursday and Friday. Deb Baldus McGrath is one of four candidates running for Congress in Western Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, which also reaches up and grabs a part of Central Wisconsin for reasons we've discussed before and no doubt we'll get into again in terms of gerrymandering. But right now you fight in the district you've got, and Deb Baldus McGrath is one of four candidates fighting in that district to succeed the retiring Democratic Congressman Ron Kind. Deb, I'd like to ask you first here about the economy and inflation. Forgive the mini rant to open it up, but Congress is broken. Extremism from the far right embraces gridlock because it feeds into their narrative that government is the enemy, or at least the obstacle. The only time they embrace spending, it seems, is for natural disasters in their backyard or tax breaks for the wealthy that they foolishly believe will still trickle down to everyone else. And yet, Western Wisconsin and all Wisconsin families need a functional Congress for a multitude of reasons, starting with the economy. The recent bout of inflation, it's a global phenomenon that was inevitably going to rise and fall as the pandemic got better managed, but still, it's rough on household budgets. So let's start, Deb, with what can Congress do and what can you advocate for to help Wisconsin families and entrepreneurs?
Well, first, thank you for framing that. Sing it, Pat, because this, you know, framing this in terms of the fact that the radical right wing, and it's part of their agenda, that this is, you know, to create this gridlock and this hysteria, if they can feed into that fear, when this is a, you know, when there is a problem that's been exacerbated by COVID and our global instability. And so this isn't just our country. It is a global issue, which I understand because I've seen how other countries' issues affect our own. But this is affecting families in our district. Families are struggling. Prices are high. It's never been harder to buy a home or a car or even to get, you know, to be able to, you know, to get to work and to make those choices for families. So we have got to hold corporations and the ultra rich accountable for the windfall profits. That is what the first thing that I believe we need to do. And of course, we need to fix our supply chain. When you talk about that, they still show weakness. And, you know, people are becoming innovative and we need to help them and sustain and provide incentives for that. And one example is the Chippewa Valley Bean, right here in Dunn County. Has been innovative and getting alternative routes for their product to get to market, going north up the Mississippi and out the St. Lawrence, because Chicago was so backed up. But they did that on their own. We need to help, and especially we need to help our local businesses, small and medium farms, so that we can help invest in them to make them sustainable and innovative. And then those union jobs. I think we need to support those union jobs because that is going to grow our economy and with high standards of the work that they do. The other thing too is bringing manufacturing back home. The latest the legislation, microchips can be manufactured here hopefully within our district, and you know, things like green energy jobs, wind and solar, that can really revitalize our economy.
You notice that every one of those things does benefit if Congress is proactive rather than simply standing in the way of, you know, spending to improve our ports and things like that. So you'll have to overcome that, institutional inertia toward investing in our infrastructure. To do that takes money. The money comes in through the tax code. Let's talk a bit about that, because certainly folks are there's a growing familiarity with the 2017 Republican tax bill. A lot has been said about the sweetheart break that Ron Johnson put in there for billionaires that needs to be capped. But there are other things as well that Congress could do if it wasn't facing the deadlock of a 50-50 Senate, for example. What do you tell people about taxes and tax policy changes that you would like to see enacted?
Well, certainly you hit it on the head this sweetheart, which is, it's just maddening to people, infuriating that the ultra rich are not paying their fair share in taxes, and that corporations have windfall profits and that return on investment is not being felt back, certainly even within our own district. And so that's where I would start with that. And of course, you know, when we talk about Congress needs to look at itself. You know, so that legislation about buying and selling and trading stocks within Congress, and it's, you know, it starts right there. And that I will be, you know, someone who really, brings that self-reflection to Congress and to speak boldly about what needs to be done. But when we talk about, you know, taxes, making that child tax credit permanent, that's to me, you know, one of the first things that we can do to help families. And that will support them. And then also incentivizing things like childcare. You know, childcare work, and for those who need it, for those lower income folks who need to have some tax breaks to be able to get childcare, because that will revitalize our economy. And of course, people will work and there will be more of a tax income then. And then folks, a living wage, you know, making sure that people can make a living wage. And then that brings more taxes in as well. So it's revitalizing our economy. And this is starting our engine.
Well, let's take that. Let's go from that living wage concept, which certainly will be, you know, hotly debated, no matter how fair it certainly seems to be when one first looks at it, and come to an area of this district that is not wage driven, but is market driven. And obviously, we're talking about farming and market prices for everything from, you know, from milk to commodities. And, you know, we before Ron Kind came to represent the district, you know, it was Steve Gunderson, a moderate Republican, and then your father before that. And everybody talked about how the 3rd Congressional District was like, you know, the center of the universe for dairy farming. And while that's still the case, dairy farming isn't what it used to be, in the sense that there aren't nearly as many family farms as there are, you know, larger farms, corporate farms, mega farms, and what have you. Agriculture is still important. But now, Deb, when we talk about that issue, it's no longer just the price of milk and whether a farm family can make it. We're talking about, you know, monopoly power in the markets, and, you know, regulations on, you know, environment and such. So when people talk to you about farming in the 3rd District, what are the top issues that a congressional representative needs to be mindful of?
Well, thank you for bringing up the past. And certainly I grew up talking about, you know, the championing of subsidy milk and whey subsidies, and how, you know, those parities really helped farmers get by, and that they were already diversifying, that farms were already beginning to diversify because they saw what was happening in the future. I was at Farm Tech Days just a couple of weeks ago, and it was interesting to speak to folks there as they were coming past and talking about how hard it is to run these small family farms, and that there are grants available that folks don't even know about because they can't, they're so busy farming, they can't even take the time to look at, you know, to gain these. So that is one thing that I will make sure is my constituent services will, and that full funding of the USDA to make sure that our farmers and small businesses have access to these grants that are out there and are not even accessed. Second of all, Pat, is that Wisconsin led the way for 100 years ago in conservation efforts, and that it was not in contradiction to our economic development. And that was through public, private, and academic partnership. And that we've got 5 great universities in this district with agronomists, and that they are working together with farmers so that they can voluntarily diversify and innovate their farms. And, and certainly organic farms and other, you know, people are turning to sheep and different kinds of cheeses, artisanal cheeses, so that they can offer something and still keep those farms. But then also we need to make sure that we do hold accountable those big farms for not only the profits that they're making, but the economic and environmental impact of those farms, so that the profits come back to those communities. People want to stay in those small towns, Pat.
And those farmers, again, are trying to, you know, use whatever resources they can access. And some of that involves the way that our laws were written. One of our first big stories at Up North News that Julian Emerson told our readers about more than 2 years ago was how the Trump administration had essentially changed the definition of organic farming, which many family farms were relying on to help make sure their products stand out. And instead, by changing the definition, pretty much any corporate farm could advertise that it was, you know, organic products. And so it's not just things like making sure the USDA has all the resources it needs, but, you know, really the minutia of definitions in the law, you know, that kind of advocacy is still what's going to be needed in this district, Deb.
Right. And Pat, you know, you're bringing up a really important point. It's also about mandates that don't have any funding behind them, that, you know, people are in standards that don't have any regulation behind them. And of course, a lot of that is within our own state that we're not addressing, that our legislature, Republican-led legislature, is not addressing. And we have a great governor that, you know, continues to take, you know, to take, and a great Secretary of Agriculture here, but that we need to look at this federally so that we can create standards and supports to farmers so that they can truly be organic. You know, the Bovingorth Homer, that was, you know, back in my father's day. Look at how far that's come. So we're just adequately, you know, saying what's on products. So
We will have much more to say about the rural economy and certain issues as we talk to those legislative candidates. You know, speaking as a former legislator myself, that is something that I think goes unappreciated, is the role a state legislature plays in whether you support or don't support a rural economy. So more about that down the road. Let's change subject with the 2 minutes we have remaining here or so and talk about the impact of the U.S. Supreme Court's repeal of Roe versus Wade. And whether that is something that makes people unhappy for a while, but ultimately does not move souls to the polls, as the concept goes, or do you feel something more tectonic is at work here over the coming 98 days?
Oh, Pat, I absolutely believe, and I know that this is going to bring people out to the polls. And boy, I am talking to people all day, every day, and to every single person will say, the right to choose is going to be the bellwether of this election, and it will bring out people like we have not seen perhaps in decades, because this is personal. And certainly to me, you know, reproductive decisions are it's a fundamental right. I'm the only mother in this race, and I understand how a decision like this is to have a child is life-changing, and that it's a lifelong commitment. And, you know, I've talked about the fact that, you know, I was in the military and had an unplanned pregnancy while I was in command in Korea. And my commander found out before I did and was, you know, stripped of command. and I was advised to resign. Now, that was, you know, 34 years ago. But the public humiliation of that, there were also economic consequences. And that is what we're going back to. So it's not just about reproductive choice. This is about, you know, making decisions for families. Right. That is, and then the economic consequences when there is no child care, and so that and people can't go back to work.
Something that will motivate all kinds of voters this fall. Deb Baldus McGrath is our guest. We're talking about the 3rd Congressional District Democratic primary next week. More after the break. This is Up North News.
You're listening to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Tomorrow on the program, Robert Craig of Citizen Action Wisconsin in our 8 o'clock hour. And at 10 a.m. tomorrow, Kirk Bankstead and Kristen Lyerly. We'll tell you more about that in just a little while. Deb Baldus McGrath joins us in the first of 4 hour-long conversations that we're going to have with the Democratic candidates running in Western Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. It's a big deal, not just because Ron Kind is retiring after all these years, and not just because the presumptive Republican nominee was, you know, at the insurrection as it took place, but simply because there are not that many swing districts left in the country, not just for the gerrymandering that we've talked about before, but just, you know, simple demographics as well. There's not an immense number of competitive, truly competitive districts. This is one of them. You see that in going back several elections as to, you know, the mix between people who definitely vote Democrat, definitely vote Republican, likely, you know, and then the ones who are truly swing. So, Deb, I want to start this segment with what is at stake in the 3rd Congressional District. Democrats control it right now. Republicans were predicted to win control of the House, but that was before the Roe v. Wade repeal, and now things are in flux again. So talk to me about what's at stake for the families in that district, the state, and frankly, the country, if control of the House of Representatives were to change.
Well, Pat, that is why I'm running, because the stakes of this election are so high. And when I say democracy is at risk, we are talking about things like our reproductive rights, talking about the future of healthcare, education, the fact that our national security is, you know, the changes that folks are looking at here, our economy. To really trying to get things done. So when I say now, so goes Wisconsin, so goes the nation. And we certainly, Wisconsin to me is now Iowa. And when I talk about the fact that there's not right now only two members of Congress that are, you know, and Ron, there's 3 seats out of the 8 in Wisconsin, and that we need to keep this seat so that Wisconsin can keep its fair share, because 2 members of Congress can't even serve on enough committees to be able to get Wisconsin's its fair share. So when I look at why I'm running and how I can figure into this, this is not a time for politicians as usual. And this is a time for someone who can work across the aisle. This is someone, you know, I have worked 25 years putting my country over politics, and I can get to the issues. I am the one candidate in this race who has spoken up a time and again, sometimes the first one and the only one, on some of the important issues, like national security, when Russia invaded Ukraine. I was up at midnight, you know, making, you know, putting out information on that. LGBTQ rights, our, you know, reproductive rights, our things about, you know, community safety, immigration. I am talking about things that are hard and that we are going to be, you know, we're going to have to tackle here. And so I've had a successful career. You know, when I look back at, you know, we were talking about Zawahiri, you know, the fact that I have worked across with people of all walks of life, and that we need to heal this nation, to come together and offer people hope so that we can revitalize the 3rd district and revitalize that economy and bring people back to feeling safe and secure here in the district.
You know, when we talk about the competitiveness of the district, it is something that that Ron Kind has taken flack, you know, from both sides, which is not unexpected in a highly competitive district. There have been times where he's even drawn a primary challenger for not embracing, you know, Medicare for All as vocally as others would like. There was a real raising of eyebrows, though, I think last week when Kind was one of only a handful of Democrats to vote against the assault weapons ban. And again, the congressman can certainly speak for himself, but I'm curious as to, you know, your view when we talk about safety. We know Republicans are going to make it sound like there's crime in all the streets right here, right now. So we need to arm people to the teeth. Where do you stand when it comes to gun safety legislation that may come before you?
Well, Pat, this is near to my heart because I have served. I'm trained and I have, you know, I've been armed in many of the years of my service and in the Army. With these weapons, with Glocks, with the M4, which is what people know as the AR-15, and I'm trained to operate in the chaos of battle, and I've been under attack, both in war zones and in embassies. And so I understand that, and I can speak with that understanding of first response and common sense when it comes to community safety measures. So I was the first and only candidate to speak out about Ron Kind's vote no on the active shooter alert system, which is an amber system that was, you know, would simply alert people that there's an incident. And I know that this is common. This is SOP for when there is some violence. And then the assault weapons ban, you know, he's one of four again. And, you know, this saying that he, you know, doesn't have enough time to review, that's what you're paid to do. This is something that you look at the legislations ahead of you and you know what is right for a district to be, you know, address. The people are what the real concerns are. People have been living in fear. So I absolutely will be able to make these common sense decisions.
You know, common sense gets trumped so often, pun intended, by people who want to politicize what should be common sense issues. There is no other developed country on earth that has the mass shooting problem that we do. It's not mental health. It's not video games. It's the guns. There should be nothing political about that. You should be trying to, you know, save lives, especially children's lives. Equally so, there is no split in the scientific community on a changing climate and of what needs to be done. And it's unfortunate that politicians who are beholden to, you know, companies that burn fossil fuels have done what they've done. But you are going to face a lot of voters who either have doubts about a changing climate or simply concerns about the expense of doing things that either mitigate the effects of it or try to, you know, burn, you know, have cleaner sources of energy. What are you hearing from folks and what are you saying to folks about climate issues?
Well, Pat, you hit the nail on the head there that this is another piece of the radical right-wing agenda that we've been talking about all within this hour. Every single piece of this is, you know, to create fear, you know, underscore that with greed and, you know, and stay away from what the real issues are. And so we look at climate change. I understand that this is a national security issue. And that this is a global imperative and that we, you know, by Trump stepped out of, you know, the Kigali Accords, the Paris Accords, the Montreal agreements, and that set us backwards. And so, one of our first steps was moving forward with our allies so that we can make the planet better because we're interconnected. But then let's bring it back down to our district. My gosh, we depend, we celebrate the air, land, and water. This is our future, and we depend on it. That mighty Mississippi, you know, when we look at the economic development of that, it is not just recreation, it's commerce and trade. And so, you know, we can balance that, the balancing the environmental protection of the upper Mississippi with the infrastructure requirements of the lock and dam system. So when I talk about this, I talk about it in terms of brass tacks, in terms of, you know, farmers getting sustainments for biodigesters, for instance. So let's try to get incentives to help re-green our own district, repowering wind and solar, you know, to help. So many, many farmers are going to that voluntarily now. So I'm able to talk about this in a global, you know, within a federal response to it. And then really try to talk about investments that we can help to make this sustainable here in our district.
It really comes down to that creativity matter we talked about earlier, not just the USDA, but the UW Extension, the Wisconsin idea itself. We can start to farmers get products to market while at the same time being good stewards to the land. So let's, with that, let's switch to, I don't want to call it election integrity, but you know, for the purposes of discussion, there is no debate about election integrity. The elections were fair, and people who are perpetuating the big lie are just continuing the temper tantrum turned coup attempt. However, I don't doubt for a minute that when you're out, you know, at fairgrounds shaking hands or whatnot, people are telling you about the movie 2000 Mules and all sorts of other, you know, rumors and conspiracy theories that they have, not the least of which are, you know, forwarded by the presumptive Republican nominee. Are you getting into conflict and you know, arguments with people when they come up to you and tell you that they think the 2020 election was not fair?
So Pat, you bring up a great point. The reason that I'm going to win this race is because I can appeal to independents and moderates, because I am someone who has stood up for our country and understand, and that I can demonstrate that I've defended it with my life for the right to vote. And that that is a sacred trust that we have, and that within our country. So when I connect that way with people, there's an ability to shake hands and say, all right, I'm listening to you. What are your real concerns about your ability to vote when you know that these are your neighbors who are at the polls? You know, these are our own people, and that this is sacred. And I have seen democracies fail. And it is about suppressing voices. It's about, you know, making them afraid. So I will be standing up for the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. I would support a voting holiday. And I was a voting assistance officer overseas. So I can tell you, I absolutely will stand up for absentee ballots. So when I talk about things like that, just letting people vote, it seems to kind of, you know, not evaporate, but bring some confidence to people.
I think people would like to hear those kinds of reassurances, especially anything that's based with facts. But, you know, it's true that there will still be emotional arguments made, not necessarily backed with facts. And I don't think there's any doubt Derek Van Orden will be about that. It's going to come up in any fall candidate debate. Let's set aside your message to the voters. What's your message to Derek Van Orden when the issue comes up of his presence on the Capitol grounds on January 6th?
Derek, as someone who took the same oath to protect and defend the Constitution, as someone who desires to lead the people of Wisconsin, then how can you be led by with lies and with this repression to go to the Capitol, our sacred place, when you know that this signals the instability? And who are you really following then? Are you really, really working for the people of Wisconsin? Or are you working for an idea that is Trump? So let's take a look at someone who has not just was at the insurrection, but has bullied the LGBTQ community, women, school boards. This is a pattern of behavior. Someone who carried a loaded weapon into an airport and is on probation and calls himself a weapons expert. So this is, you know, this is not just one bad choice. This was many bad choices.
Let's turn to something that I would hope would be not a difficult question. But again, because of your military experience, it has to be said that mysteriously, or not so mysteriously, I guess, a bill stalled again last week that would provide additional assistance to veterans who were exposed to burn pits overseas, something that Ron Johnson voted against before he voted for, and then voted against it again, and which every Wisconsin Republican member of the House delegation has voted against. Is there any reason whatsoever to be hesitant on passing this kind of a bill?
Pat, this is, I'm speechless about this, that Republicans are fist bumping over a revenge vote involving veterans who have been hurt in burn pits. And I've seen those burn pits. I know what was happening. And it was, you know, for them, it was the only choice at the time to get rid of, you know, things. But these people are suffering. just like they did from DDT in Korea and Vietnam. Common sense legislation to take care of our veterans who are sacrificing their lives.
Deb Baldus McGrath has joined us for this hour, one of four candidates for the 3rd Congressional District Democratic primary next Tuesday. Deb, it was a real pleasure. Thank you so much for visiting with us.
Thank you, Pat.
We will be back to wrap up this hour in just a moment. You're listening to Up North News. I want a name when I lose. They call Alabama the Crimson Tide. Call me Deacon Blue. Deacon Blue.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information, live from Lake Wasota. This is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. The picture in my mind
of everything. I wish I would have had time to run out to the garage and get a visual prop for Deb when she was talking about visiting Farm Technology Days, Luke. It was once Farm Progress Days, now Farm Tech Days. Exhibits again this year. Clark County, the loyal community, did a stellar job, except for double checking the fields, because as I drove back, started to hear a noise. Driver next to me starts pointing. I then come to realize not only do I have a flat tire, but somewhere in that field, I ran over a spike not a nail. I mean, it was a spike that was somewhere. And I don't know if that was farm related or, you know, the exhibit tents. It fell out of somebody's toolbox, whatever the case may be. I'm just thankful that it happened in Chippewa Falls, two blocks away from my usual service station. So, you know, so there I was with my neighbor Art, who came along and helped me, and we're rolling this tire, you know, down the streets of downtown Chippewa Falls, looking like Spanky and Alfalfa from Our Gang. Like, this is our only toy. Instead of a hoop and a stake, we're hoop and a stick, we're pushing this tire. But we got it plugged up and put back in. Something I don't think Deb went through that. And of course, now she's got staff, she's got people, you know, to do this for her.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds like one heck of a tire change that you had to go through then. I don't envy you.
Thankfully, a good neighbor just happened to be walking past and the service station, you know, plugged it up, got me in right away. They really can't say enough about, you know, when you find a hometown business, you know, that will take care of you. That can happen in big cities, you know, in your neighborhoods as well as small communities. But when we moved to Chippewa Falls in 1995, you know, we'd lived in Eau Claire, we'd lived in Rice Lake, we'd lived in West Bend, we lived in the cities for a while. But boy, we knew this was Shangri-La right from the very beginning, for as nice as people were, about this and that. And, you know, they're good. People are good and they're patient, but they will, you know, they will tease you occasionally. And I'm expecting more of that after what I'm about to endure with my knee. I had my left knee has always been, you know, it's had an issue. My NFL career never really took off. First, because I never tried. But second, because this left knee has just been an issue. I wrenched it especially hard now 4 weeks ago, and it just never got better. Not with ice packs, not with ibuprofen. You know, you're wincing with every step. So I finally went to see a physical therapist here in Chippewa about it. Luke, this was not a good sign. After you know, she kind of felt the kneecap and around the back, listening for cracking and popping, having stretching things. She said, "Has anybody ever taught you how to walk properly with a cane?"
Oh no, that's like the only
worst.
There's
some good news.
Yeah, the only worst thing would be if she just like did a complete uh-oh, like no other context.
Oh, it was. There was this uh-oh.
Oh no,
with the potential diagnosis, which I'm hoping to get confirmed, later this afternoon when this puppy finally gets x-rayed. But she says, "Wait here," and then comes back with, you know, a generic looking cane that I'm, you know, and I think that was her way of saying, now I can't tell you, you know, that you're about to need this for, you know, surgery or something else. But why don't you practice, you know, going up and down
the hallway. Take this bad boy out for a test run. That's what you need to do with the cane.
yeah, exactly. So it occurs to me that whether I'm going to need it temporarily or whether this is some ongoing issue, I have to start paying attention now to some of these, like, you know, infomercials and things. Like, there's like the different canes, you know, some that have like four legs on them and maybe a bicycle horn that you can toot. They probably have Bluetooth now on these things where I can get, you know, updates, you know, sent right to your cane. Whatever the case may be, this is not something I didn't mind turning 58, you know, a month ago. I take that back. I minded it terribly. I don't like thinking that 60 is just over the horizon. But doing it with a bad wheel and being taught, you know, and being asked, would you prefer to learn to walk with a cane or with a crutch? You know, you're gonna go with the cane because at least maybe you've got the chance of getting something stylish, you know, something like a walking stick.
Like House. He puts the hot rod flame up the cane. Dr. House did it that way.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's all kinds of ways that we personalize what we have right now. A lot of people will personalize, you know, the back of their cell phones. They'll get different skins on that. And of course, you know, people do it with their cars and what have you. Yeah, I guess it's going to be a cane. Perhaps we'll see when this thing gets, you know, looked at later today. We talked earlier about the Brewers trading Josh Hader. The Brewers were off yesterday. They will play at Pittsburgh tonight, starting at 6:05 Central Time. It does not look like we're going to get any new bats. At least that's, you know, David Stearns had said about as much. And so we'll take him at his word on that. But I tell you, it really tells you something about the value of Josh Hader that, you know, you trade away the guy who's number one in baseball in saves. But what you get back in return is the guy who's currently number two in saves and three more players, you know, three pitchers total and an outfielder. And apparently one or two of these pitchers, you know, has some real prospect, and that's got to make you feel good. I guess, but I'm going to miss Hader. I will always be able to tell people that I witnessed his immaculate inning, not in person, but I did see it. And an immaculate inning for the uninitiated is when you set down the opposing team, three outs, three strikeouts, not just three strikeouts on nine pitches. 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. I witnessed it in a pizza joint while visiting with some friends. And as my long-suffering wife will tell you, if there's a screen anywhere nearby, you know, my eyes are going to be darting over there while I'm trying to have small talk because I'm a terrible person that way. But, you know, there was a Brewer game on. So I'm looking at it. And, of course, no sound, but I'm watching and I'm thinking after the second out, I'm like, do I see what I think I'm seeing? And when Josh Hader threw that ninth pitch and got that third strikeout for an immaculate inning, I mean, I just banged on the table and the pizza tray went up, and I'm explaining this to some friends who are from Minnesota. So they're Twins fans. They wouldn't know, what's the old saying, if it was Josh Hader and Abraham Lincoln in a police lineup, they still couldn't pick out Josh Hader. But they once I explained to them the concept of an immaculate inning, they understood that it was a great deal. But the Brewers have, I mean, look, we've had closers flame out before. There was that real concern about Hader, and you know, we've seen closers in the past sputter when they get to the end. So I'm hoping we get somebody. Maybe we get the next, the next Trevor Hoffman, who ended his career in Milwaukee. I was fortunate enough to see him in San Diego in his prime, and let me tell you something: when he comes out of that outfield bullpen to Hell's Bells,
chills,
and the San Diego crowd is just going crazy because they know what a hero he is. Man, you are watching baseball. That is real stuff. You are listening to Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Rebecca Cook, candidate for Congress, is coming up after the break. I'm just lying here.